translation and put by His Divine Grace. In the course of the evolutionary process, which is caused by fruitive activities, due to undesirable material sense gratification, I have received this human form of life, which can lead to the heavenly planets, to liberation, to the lower species, or to rebirth among human beings. Purport. All living entities within this material world are undergoing the cycle of birth and death according to the laws of nature. This struggle of birth and death in different species may be called the evolutionary process, but in the Western world it has been wrongly explained. Darwin's theory of evolution from animal to man is incomplete because the theory does not present the reverse condition, namely evolution from man to animal. In this verse, however, evolution has been very well explained on the strength of Vedic authority. Human life, which is obtained in the course of the evolutionary process, is a chance for elevation, swarga pavarga, or for degradation, dirascham punarasyacha. If one uses this human form of life properly, he can elevate himself to the higher planetary systems, where material happiness is many thousands of times better than on this planet, or one may cultivate knowledge by which to become free from the evolutionary process and be reinstated in one's original spiritual life. This is called apavarga, or liberation. Material life is called pavarga, because here we are subject to five different states of suffering, represented by the letters ba, fa, ba, pa, and ma. Ba means parishrama, very hard labor. Fa means fena, or foam from the mouth. For example, sometimes we see a horse foaming at the mouth with heavy labor. Ba means birthata, disappointment. In spite of so much hard labor, at the end we find disappointment. Bha means bhaya, or fear. In material life, one is always in the blazing fire of fear, since no one knows what will happen next. Finally, ma means mrityu, or death. When one attempts to nullify these five different statuses of life, ba, fa, ba, bha, and ma, one achieves apavarga, or liberation from the punishment of material existence. The word tirascham refers to degraded life. Human life, of course, provides an opportunity for the best living conditions. As Western people think, from the monkeys come the human beings, who are more comfortably situated. However, if one does not utilize his human form for swarga or apavarga, he falls again to the degraded life of animals like dogs and hogs. Therefore, a sane human being must consider whether he would elevate himself to the higher planets, prepare to free himself from the evolutionary process, or travel again through the evolutionary process in higher and lower grades of life. If one works piously, one may be elevated to the higher planetary systems, or achieve liberation and return home back to Godhead. But otherwise, one may be degraded to life as a dog, a hog, and so on. As explained in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 25, Yanti deva vrata devan. Those interested in being elevated to the higher planetary systems, devaloka or swargaloka, must prepare to do so. Similarly, if one wants liberation and wants to return home, back to Godhead, he should prepare himself for that purpose. It goes on. Our Krishna consciousness movement is therefore the highest movement for the benediction of human society, because this movement is teaching people how to go back home, back to Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, text number 22, it is clearly stated that different forms of life are obtained by association with the three modes of material nature. Karanam gunasangyosya sadasat yoni janmasu. According to one's association with the material qualities of goodness, passion, and ignorance in life, in one's next life, one achieves an appropriate body. Modern civilization does not know that because of varied association in material nature, the living entity, although eternal, is placed in different disease conditions known as the many species of life. Modern civilization is unaware of the laws of nature. Prakrate kriyamanani gunaihi karmani sarvashah ahankar vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the free modes of material nature, thinks himself the performer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature. Bhagavad Gita text, chapter 3, text number 27. Every living entity is under the full control of the stringent laws of material nature, but rascals think themselves independent. Actually, however, they cannot be independent. This is foolishness. A foolish civilization is extremely risky, and therefore the Krishna consciousness movement is trying to make people aware of their fully dependent condition under the stringent laws of nature, and is trying to save them from being victimized by strong Maya, which is Krishna's external energy. Behind the material laws is the supreme controller, Krishna. Maya dhyakshena prakritihi suyate sa characharam. Therefore, if one surrenders unto Krishna, mam eva ye prabadyante, mayam etam tarantite, one may immediately be freed from the control of external nature. Sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. That should be the aim of life. Om agyanati mirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha vanchakalpaturubhyascha kripasindhubhya evacha patithanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhara shri vasadi gaura bhakta vrinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama hare rama 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 hare 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 Krishna. So thank you all for attending this morning's class, the day following the sacred Vrata Ekadashi of Amalika, the day on the disappearance of the foremost disciple of Lakshmipati, Sri Madhavendra Puri. So we'll tie in this particular day for our Vaishnava Sampradaya with this verse a bit later on during the class. With very long purport, it's very difficult sometimes to focus on the many types of instructions that Srila Prabhupada is mentioning, and therefore I'll try to break up some aspects of the purport to give further understanding where possible. So just to repeat the translation. In the course of the evolutionary process, which is caused by fruitive activities due to undesirable material sense gratification, I have received this human form of life which can lead to the heavenly planets, to liberation, to the lower species, or to rebirth among human beings. Chapter 13, the behavior of a perfect person. So herein, Narada Muni, being the direct representation and son of Lord Brahma, in the sense of being expanded from Lord Brahma, he's discussing these qualities with Yudhishthir, the incarnation representation of Dharmaraj. And Narada Muni, he's pulling out a particular discussion between Bhakta Prahlad, Prahlad Maharaj, and an Avadhuta. And during the discourse, this particular Avadhuta, who Prahlad Maharaj, along with his confidential associates, was wandering around the material universe in trying to find out about pure devotional service. What's very interesting is that Prahlad Maharaj was, of course, undoubtedly so liberated in Krishna Prem that the Lord himself descended in one of his most unique forms, Lord Narasimha. And the reason why Lord Narasimha is unique, because Rupa Goswami explains in the scriptures that three personalities tend to manifest all of the qualities of God. And that is Sri Krishna, Lord Rama, and Lord Narasimha. And therefore you find that sometimes during the course of the material creation, these three personalities interchange pastimes. So for example, at the beginning of a particular kalpa, Krishna himself descended at the beginning of creation to initiate Lord Brahma. Similarly, in the previous kalpa, Lord Narasimha descended and initiated Brahma with all Vedic knowledge. And therefore you find that these three personalities interchange pastimes sometimes. And Prahlad Maharaj was so exalted that Lord Sri Krishna personally descended as Lord Narasimha. In his personal association, Nevertheless, Prahlad Maharaj, he actually felt himself humble. It's amazing. He actually felt himself not pure. And therefore, desiring pure devotional service, along with his confidential associates, he wanted to seek out pure devotees so that he can understand pure devotional service. It's an amazing level to have. A person who Krishna personally descended for still goes out seeking pure devotion through the association of sadhu sangha. And therefore, he found this particular avadut. And the avadut, he is now describing some of his realizations. And a very particular point that Srila Prabhupada is mentioning within this purport is the results of the human form of life by explaining swarga apavarga dwaram. The word dwara means door. And Prabhupada translates the word as the gate. So Prabhupada is particularly explaining on how the various states of life can result in the entrance to one of these four particular destinations. Heavenly planets, liberation, going to the lower species of life, or even rebirth among human beings. What's quite remarkable is that sometimes the way life unfolds itself, one may not actually know where one's destination leads. But the way Sri Krishna has devised the material nature is that one generally gets elevated. It's very difficult in the Vedic culture to become degraded, because in human form of life, it's quite natural that one follows rules and regulations, whether it's how to sit properly, whether it's how to eat properly, whether it's how to be respectful to elders, community members, partners, children, etc. And therefore, just by dint of following such pious karma, one naturally goes to swarga. And what's even more interesting is that fruitive activities, which is an aspect that the Bhagavatam begins off by explaining, that the Bhagavatam kicks out fruitive activities. It has no interest in the four purusharthas, namely dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Now, dharma, artha, and kama, or moksha, are mentioned repeatedly in the Srimad Bhagavatam, because you'll find if people do not understand the importance of going back home, back to Godhead, because life really, for the general population, is about being happy, successful, materially affluent, socially reformed, and undoubtedly respected by others. Therefore, you find that even in the course of trying to gain liberation, and of course, we understand liberation to be not just Brahman realization, but realization of back home, back to Godhead. You find that even while in the material body, trying to gain such param dham, such high destination, one still sometimes falls into or is forced to perform fruitive activities. So now I'll give some common examples. So for example, one becomes diseased, or one's lifespan suddenly is being told to be reduced by some terminal illness, or one's material condition is so poverty-stricken that one is then forced to try to improve the material condition, whether that's through some sales, whether that's through learning knowledge, whether that's just through acquiring different networks. It's actually very difficult to free oneself from fruitive activities. If you think about this very dearly and deeply, you'll see actually it is almost impossible to free yourself from fruitive activities, even on the path of devotional life. And therefore, especially in India, when people have seen, especially brahmanas or priests have seen, that no matter what path people are on, they always fall back down to fruitive activities, then is the recommendation of worshipping demigods. And sometimes what happens is, for devotees who read Bhagavad Gita and they realize that Krishna explains that one must not worship anybody else apart from himself, there tends to be a element of fanaticism, wherein one even goes to the extent of somehow or another disrespecting demigods, Now, in the true Vaishnava Siddhanta, the Goswamis explain that the demigods are not none other than a manifestation of Krishna's various energies. And therefore, by disrespecting the devtas and the demigods, one actually directly disrespects Krishna, because they are nothing other than a manifestation of his energies. Vayu, the air, Agni, fire, etc. But then what happens is that although Vaishnavas respect the demigods, they do not and they avoid engaging in activities that constitute worship of the devatas. And Bhatta Goswami explains vividly through the Sandarbhas, because he actually was the one who compiled the verses for the Sandarbhas, and Jiva Goswami just put it together, added an index and put it into structure. But actually Smartacharya, Bhatta Goswami was the one who had the wide knowledge without having things like Vedabase and internet. He had an encyclopedia of knowing exactly where to look at for a particular subject. So in the Sandarbhas, Bhatta Goswami provided all this information. And therefore you find that he explains that any type of worship to the demigods directly constitutes Nama Aparad. So while chanting Hare Krishna and while trying to gain knowledge and love of Krishna, one is then being pushed back further and further because of Nama Aparad. And he goes on to explain in especially Satkriya Saradipika how one can actually fall from the status of Vaishnavism and become a materialistic karmi. Very, very dangerous. And then you find, for example, astrology. That some people, they see, okay, fine, second stage, I will accept Krishna, but I would not worship demigods. Next stage is, okay, let's now understand Prakriti. So then in Prakriti, we have destiny, we have free will. And during the course of trying to understand what's in plan for my life, we then come across various planets. Now we can say that the planets are not demigods, they're just objects of different results and different gifts, different benedictions, and of course, the different sinful reactions too. And therefore you find that in the scriptures, or especially individuals that follow the process of Karmakanda, then they recommend one to worship specific planets. Now the worship isn't done the very same way that one worships demigods. All you have to do is put on the right color. It's simple as that. Prabhu, I'm actually not worshiping demigods. I'm just putting on the right color. So if one has a deficiency, or for example, benediction from the sun, then you go around wearing yellow. Just a coincidence. You may start eating yellow things. You may start giving yellow gifts. You know, if your friend starts giving you everything yellow, you think, why? You start having yellow cars. And, you know, you kind of justify yourself. Actually, I'm not worshipping. I'm just becoming yellow. That's it. You know, it's a bit like saying, I'm going to become green. For Mercury, you know, let's go green. You know, everything's now about green. But you see what happens in this situation. One actually also is following the rules and regulations of particular devatas, and in this situation, grahas. Now, what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? He says, "Yah shastram vidim utsrijya," that one should only follow the dictates of the scriptures. And such following is very clearly not described in the Vedic texts. And therefore, once again, this constitutes going against Krishna's words of the Bhagavad Gita. Because such ideologies and such practices are not at all enunciated in scripture. And then the question comes back, but actually it helped. It contributed to my success. I had a disease. I had a problem, whether it was financial, and it actually worked. And they will kill themselves describing on actually these things work. So now then the understanding is, how comes they work if they're not sanctioned by scripture? And that is because in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, Ye yathamam prabhadyante, that because Krishna manifests himself in the material world, even if one knows to respect a book, a flower, material nature, the air, as soon as one starts appreciating the material world, Krishna accepts that as worship to himself. But avidipurvakam. In the Gita, Krishna says, he's doing so without the correct understanding. So one is adopting various colors, various characteristics, without acknowledging Krishna. And therefore, in the previous purport, Srila Prabhupada is quoting from Bhagavatam himself, saying, Akama sarvakamova mokshakama udharadi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the personality of Godhead. And therefore Krishna, because he accepts all of these various things that we just previously described as indirect worship, therefore you get a result. You're not getting a result because you're worshipping the demigods. You're not getting a result because you're following the colors and characteristics of the planets. You're only getting a result because Krishna sanctions it and he accepts this worship. But avidipurvakam, gradually, with complete offense and complete acknowledgement. And therefore, in this verse, the Bhagavatam describes, even if one is desiring material advancements, one is degraded, one should still and only grab hold of the feet of Sri Krishna and do everything through him. Because if you do so, as Krishna Bhagwan explains in the Bhagavad Gita, one becomes gradually closer to Krishna. So even though one may follow any type of philosophy, any type of karmakanda rituals, if one does so through Krishna, which again means that it has to be nurtured according to the scriptural dictates. For example, diet, lifestyle, has to make sure that one isn't going against Vaishnava principles. Then that becomes devotional service. Tivrena bhakti yogena and yajeta purusham param. One starts beginning to worship Krishna. So it's a fine line between fruitive activities and devotional service. Because even in devotional service, one aspires for material help. But the difference is when you're doing it through Krishna, then even though that's mundane and fruitive, it gradually, very slowly ensures that it leads you to unconditional bhakti yoga. Now, of course, we're speaking about the general population here that find it very difficult to step above the material nature and only and solely perform unconditional service without any regard for health, for wealth, for fame, and even renunciation, beauty, etc. Now, of course, you'll find that only very few people are separate from that. And therefore, bahunam janmanam ante, actually, gyanavan mam. That gyanavan means one who is in actual knowledge of me, who actually understands Krishna's heart. One who completely understands that even all vices that I may be going through, even all problems, tribulations that I may be going through is actually coming from Krishna as my source of attending his feet. Therefore, a devotee, for example, sees terminal illnesses and other types of diseases as a path quicker to Krishna. Because Krishna is directly engaged and in charge of that devotional living entity. And therefore, Krishna is explaining in the Bhagavad Gita repeatedly on how one only needs to surrender unto him. And therefore, fruitive activities stop at the point where one acknowledges everything to be coming from Krishna. And therefore, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita repeatedly on how one is doing so irregularly, incorrectly. Therefore, one has to only understand that everything comes from me. And again, this is a very important point because, like I explained, that it's not that one should be discarded and rejected from society before being fruitive, but one should be helped if there is a need for fruitive life in the way that we described earlier by encouraging them to only go for Krishna. And When doing so, then this verse comes into play. Swarga. One naturally, automatically starts being elevated. And therefore, after death, Swarga, Apavarga. Those two gates, Dwarams, are open. Either elevation to the heavenly planets or elevation back home, back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada, in this purport, also describes on how the spirit soul, being bewildered by the material nature, thinks himself the doer. And therefore, again, we're going back to our original point that Krishna is explaining, that for the person who is aspiring for pure devotional service, he completely understands that Krishna directly intervenes in every aspect of that individual's life. And therefore, Madhvendra Puri, the foremost disciple of Lakshmipati, in the direct disciplic succession of Madhva Acharya, on this particular day of his disappearance, Prabhupada explains in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that he is the source of the ecstatic symptoms of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Madhvendra Puri had, as probably we all know, had two foremost disciples, Advaita Acharya and Ishvara Puri. Now, Ishvara Puri had the great fortune of being present during the time of the disappearance of Madhvendra Puri. And Madhvendra Puri, Kaviraj Goswami explains in the Antya Lila, that Madhvendra Puri actually passed on his loving mood of pure devotion into the heart of his disciple Ishvara Puri. And then that was then passed on from Ishvara Puri to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who then manifested this ecstatic prema in this world. Madhvendra Puri, just very, very briefly, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, from the very beginning, being such an elevated, pure devotee of the Lord, Krishna directed him to Vrindavan. And while in Vrindavan, Krishna personally appeared to him as a cowherd boy. And we all know, with the sacred pot of milk, Madhvendra Puri asks him, "Where did you get this milk from?" Now, just previously, Madhvendra Puri was in need, or not in need, somehow thinking of the need to fulfill his trishna, his thirst. And Krishna reciprocated by personally appearing in the form of a cowherd boy. Now, Madhvendra Puri was obviously not, he was obviously very intelligent. And therefore, you know, you look very familiar. And therefore, before engaging in any further conversation, Krishna said, I'll be back for the pot. And then he vanished from that very spot. Now, of course, Krishna didn't come back physically to collect his pot. Instead, the following night, he appeared to Madhvendra Puri in a dream. So here you go, from the very beginning, Madhvendra Puri was so elevated that Krishna appears personally as himself very recently, just about 500, 600 years ago. And then he appears on the very same night, in the very same form. And as soon as Madhvendra Puri envisioned Krishna in that form, he realized that actually that coward boy was Krishna himself. And then Krishna Bhagavan explained that a few years ago, when the Muslims had come to Vrindavan, Shishi Radha Gokulnanda Bhagavan ki jai, Shishi Sita Ramakshma Hanuman ki jai, Shishi Gauri Thaya ki jai, that when Vrindavan and Vraj was invaded, the priests of this particular Gopala deity hid the deity in the dense fields of grass and mud, by which the invaders, in particular the Muslims, would not be able to break and destroy this deity. And therefore, Krishna appearing in the dream of Madhvendra Puri describes him the exact spot where he was buried, requesting him to take him out. And then Krishna actually described the process for purifying himself. Now, it's interesting, because on one hand, Krishna describes the process of purifying himself. And on the other hand, when the devotee gets an opportunity to perform such deity worship, one then becomes closer and closer through deity worship, and Prabhupada explains that at the most highest pinnacle, Archana Siddhi, it becomes perfected in life through deity worship. Because as one starts treating Krishna through etiquette and through love, through various ingredients, one then starts understanding Krishna to be a person and not just a deity. And therefore, Lord Gopala, he just started to describe to Madhvendra Puri exactly how to purify the deity. And he described to bring gallons and liters of sacred waters and various items. Now, technically, the Goswamis describe this to be the Shilpi Dosha Snanam, to eradicate impurities of the deities by a particular bathing ceremony, which we can broadly describe as the Abhishekam. So the following morning, Madhvendra Puri, having got some manpower together, excavated a deity of Gopal in the exact spot that he was given in the vision. And thereafter, he installed the Lord on the top of Govardhan Hill. And during the installation ceremony, you find that the Goswamis of Vrindavan, from that particular type of ceremony, they then brought out the Pratishtha Vidhi, which was then translated and made available by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as the standard process of installing deities. And you find that various limbs of the Lord were checked, were spiritualized through the Anga Nyasa. Prabhupada describes in the 10th Kato, in the chapter of the killing of Putana. Prabhupada describes, in fact, he actually explains that the process of Anga Nyasa, wherein one uses various hand gestures, using just one's material hands to purify and spiritualize one's own senses and body, is also used on the Lord. And Prabhupada actually describes that this used to be a regular activity in India, because this process of Anga Nyasa in that particular chapter is being performed by Yashoda Rohini Bhyam Taha Samam Bhala Starvataha Raksham Vidra Samyak Go Pucha Brahmanadibihi. In the 10th canto, Vyasadeva explains that Yashoda and Rohini would perform this process of Anga Nyasa on Lord Shri Krishna and Balaram in order for protection. And they would also use things such as the Go Pucha Brahmanadibihi, the towel of a cow as well, to purify the Lord. And Prabhupada explains that actually the culture, the Vedic culture, has become so degraded that people have lost the basic ways of purifying their bodies, such as performing the Anga Nyas. And therefore the material civilization is as it is. So you can read that chapter, the chapter of the killing of Putana, and Prabhupada describes this. So Madhvendra Puri uses the process of Anga Nyas. He bathes the deity to eradicate all types of inauspiciousness, having been buried in the mud. And it's very instructive to describe on how a pure devotee, despite Krishna personally appearing to him, despite Krishna again appearing in his vision, he still performs Vedi Bhakti. He still performs service to Krishna through the rules and regulations, because it is by those rules and regulations that one actually develops ecstatic love. It is not that when one accepts and one gets elevated to the Daganuga platform, one then disregards these methods. And one who disregards these methods, as Prabhupada describes and the Goswami describes, and by the very example of the pure devotees, actually such a person is not on the Dagamarg. Because these rules and regulations are directly fulfilling the instructions of God. And if one even cannot fulfill the instructions of God, then what chance is there of being in pure devotional service? It's just absolutely contradictory. And therefore you find Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta and Madhvendra Puri, the Acharya, the first person who manifested ecstatic prema in this world, also performed Vedi Bhakti in this way, even despite being on such an elevated platform. Even after the installation and after organizing particular devotees, Vaishnava Brahmins, who take over the worship of Lord Gopala, Lord Shri Krishna again appeared to Madhvendra Puri in a dream, asking him to go to South India, and in particular to bring back sandalwood and camphor of very, very, very large quantities. Now, Prabhupada explains that at that time, during the state of India, the invaders, especially the Muslims, had put into place various tax points throughout the entire land of India. And therefore it was very, very difficult for anyone, especially someone to bring back kilos and kilos of sandalwood and camphor from one part of India to the other. Very, very difficult, having to go through so many tax collectors. And of course, you know, India is a land of bribery, you know, having to kind of try to get through with offering words, probably come back empty-handed. It was very, very difficult. And therefore, Sri Krishna, he wanted to show by example that Mandvandana Puri, despite knowing the state of India at that time in history, still went through so much tribulations to go all the way. Now, of course, we had no cars, we had no train systems, literally walking all the way to Dakshina Bharata, to the southern parts of India, to procure camphor and sandalwood. And Sri Krishna, he just saw the intent of his pure devotee. And as soon as Madhvendra Puri acquired these items, rather than put Madhvendra Puri through this very difficult path back to Vrindavan to go through all these tax collectors and difficulties, Krishna again appeared to him in a dream, saying to him, actually, because the deities are all interconnected and I'm manifested in all forms of deities, just go to Gopinathji in Ramuna and offer the camphor and the sandalwood upon the Lord's body. And if you do that, I will accept that in the form of Gopala, the deity of Govardhan, as receiving that worship. So Madhvendra Puri immediately arranged, personally arranged, and it's quite funny actually, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the word salary is used, that Madhvendra Puri actually gave a salary to the Brahmins, requesting them to make sure that every speck of the camphor and the sandalwood is used to decorate and cool the body of the deity of Gopinath. And Madhvendra Puri personally oversaw this aspect of devotional service. And having done so, he then returned back to Vrindavan. It's a very, very short pastime. But you can see that in this pastime, how Sri Krishna repeatedly appeared to Madhvendra Puri again and again and again, showing on how the next point, which is quite important, that during the departure of Madhvendra Puri, this Dwadashi day, the Falguna Mass, during the departure of Madhvendra Puri, was, despite having received darshan personally, Krishna coming personally to serve him and appearing to him again and again in dreams and instructing him, clearly there's no chance of him not being in association with Krishna. While Madhvendra Puri was departing, he felt himself so unqualified that he kept reciting a hymn that was first spoken by Srimati Radhika, i.e. that Madhvendra Puri is saying that I am so fallen that I don't have the I'm so fallen that I don't receive the association of Sri Krishna. I'm being taken far from Sri Krishna. When would Sri Krishna appear to me? When would he bestow to me Mathura, Vraja? And in this way, Madhvendra Puri is genuinely thinking himself so fallen that he's completely separated from Sri Krishna. And he was feeling this separation so deeply that these were the words that he was reciting again and again and again on this day today, during the time of his departure. Now, Madhvendra Puri, it goes beyond this lecture, but Madhvendra Puri wanted to show an example to the world about the difference between two disciples of a farly advanced pure devotee in the form of Ramachandra Puri and Ishwara Puri. Now, Ramachandra Puri and Ishwara Puri were both present at the time of the departure of, or the last moments of, Madhvendra Puri's manifested pastimes. The difference. When Ramachandra Puri heard Madhvendra Puri, his spiritual master, recite this verse on how I'm so fallen that I haven't received darshan of Sri Krishna, when would he give me his darshan? Ramachandra Puri was saying, how sad. I feel sorry for my spiritual master. Oh, he's come to the fag end of his life and he still didn't gain Krishna. I'm so sorry to hear about this. Maybe you should just do something easier and meditate upon Brahman. And if you meditate upon Brahman, then there's some chance of actually gaining the Brahma Jyoti. Madhvendra Puri was saying, what is this? You know, I'm at the fag end of my life. I'm at the very end of my life, wherein I'm begging for Sri Krishna to manifest himself and to take me into his association. And then I have this idiot, literally, causing me even more problems. What is going on? And he banished Rama. Just get out. You are no longer my disciple. You do not understand anything. You know, the last thing that you can do is to help your spiritual master at the time of his departure. And you're just causing me more problems. You know, and he banished Ramachandrapuri. And then the very humble and meek Isharapuri, Kedhanya, Laila Sri Chaitanya, Jagadguru, Gaura Mahaprabhu, that personality who was greatly benedicted by Krishna himself appearing in the form of Radha and Krishna, and he accepted him as a spiritual master. Isharapuri, such a humble and meek soul, he then tried his best to remind and talk about the pastimes of Sri Krishna and to recite the Hare Krishna Mahamantra to Madhavendra Puri. So he was trying to help his spiritual master by just doing the needful, by reciting the pastimes and the sacred holy names. And by doing so, he performed devotional service to Madhavendra Puri, and from the worldly perspective, helped Madhavendra Puri leave this world and return back home, back to Godhead. But of course, Madhavendra Puri already fixed in devotional service. Krishna's already appearing to him in this very material world, in the material form of this manifested world. And Madhavendra Puri just wanted to show the difference between the two disciples, that even someone like Madhavendra Puri, and it's very important to note that I find that even someone like Madhavendra Puri can have a disciple like Ramachandra Puri. Because sometimes, you know, we can think that Prabhupada, being so elevated and so distinguished from the various acharyas, how was it possible for him to have initiated and had some disciples who may have performed, very, very, very few, who may have performed at some particular difficulty in their life, activities that are extremely heinous. But then you actually find that this is the nature of the material world. And the same situation happened to Madhavendra Puri. And Ramachandra Puri, you know, he didn't even learn from his mistake. His spiritual master even chastising him and kicking him out of his home, telling him, you're banished. What did he do? He continued to find fault in Vaishnavas. He didn't even learn from that mistake. That was how fallen he actually was from that perspective. Despite being banished, he used to find fault in Vaishnavas by encouraging them to do something offensive and then saying, ah! See, you're such a rascal. You are so fallen. And it got to the point where Ramachandra Puri would even use his tactics on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was associating with Paramananda Puri, Ramachandra realized, you know what, I've heard about this guy. You know, how much he eats, how much he dances, how beautiful he is. He's definitely something fallen about him, and want to try to find a mistake in him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is talking about. And he actually went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and by, again, time is limiting the pastime, but he then found fault in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, saying, you know, this is just, you're just so fallen. Can't believe how much you eat, how richly you eat. And, you know, Mahaprabhu actually began to apologize. And Ramachandra Puri was so disgusted with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he just blanked him and just walked out. Now, generally, you don't actually do that. You normally just listen, right, fine, okay, let's leave. But at that time, to do that, you know, to actually walk away while somebody's talking to you is really disrespectful. It's extremely offensive. Nowadays, you know, it's fine to do so. You know, people don't actually mind. It's like, okay, why? Your mobile phone rang or you had to do something else. But Ramachandra Puri, he just walked away from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu actually, despite doing that, he didn't offend or begin to criticize Ramachandra. He was just saying to him, oh, he's the guru of my spiritual master, etc., etc. And he's, you know, he's a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. He's like my spiritual master. And he was thinking how bad of himself. And if you read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Mahaprabhu actually then put on rules and regulations upon himself. Actually, you know what Ramachandra said? It was actually quite true. I'm going to stop eating this foods and that foods and accepting invitations from that out and this house. So, you know, I suppose from this story, what I understand is that even though one can be so fallen, it's not actually up to us to judge them. And Mahaprabhu showed on how he took the best from the criticism of Ramachandra, and he actually reformed himself despite not being needed to reform himself. So very complex pastimes, trying to understand the lives of the acharyas and how they bring in their disciples who are maybe even fallen, and then the Lord himself comes, and even with fallen disciples who criticize and who are banished by the spiritual master, even God himself doesn't consider them fallen. Saludeva samantavya, you know, such verses then start ringing in our heads. What extent Krishna actually means by this. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, by his very example, shows on how even he still didn't go to say, you know what, you're just a rascal, you just did this to my spiritual master, who do you think you are? He didn't do any of that. He actually thought that what he's saying is actually quite true. And then he started to improve himself, so he took the best of this. So it's so instructive. You know, whenever you read Kaviraj Goswami's text, you find that every aspect is so instructive. And even though someone like myself may be reading those passages, you think, right, I'm sure when Mahaprabhu meets him, Mahaprabhu is going to just chastise him and tell him, you're just this and you're just that. But the entire opposite happens. And then you realize, actually, on how our mentality is so really far, at least mine, is so really far from the truth of Vaishnava etiquette and the love that Vaishnavas have for each other. And even for the fallen. Thank you very much. Shri Madhvendra Puri Acharya ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.